For inviting me to talk today. I'm actually in Southampton, and so you can just see a glimpse of Southampton behind me. That's a real background, not a Zoom background. So I'm really pleased to have the chance to talk to you today about social citizenship and people with dementia. It's a topic that I've been very interested in now for over 15 years since I completed my PhD. So it's something I've been thinking about researching and teaching on for many years. So I'm always grateful to have the chance to talk about it. I think for all of us, a real challenge is, and a real concern is about not getting left behind. And I think particularly during this coronavirus pandemic, we're all very concerned about getting left behind. And we all want to stay part of the human race. We all want to stay involved and connected to our communities and society. So I think it's a big concern for us all about not getting left behind. And it might be that many of us sometimes feel like we want to stay in bed, and because of some of the challenges that many of us are facing. So my talk is about not getting left behind, and I think it's a particularly important for people with dementia, who are a growing subgroup of older people who are at a very high risk, I think, of being left behind, particularly during this current pandemic situation. But previous to that, I think people with dementia have always been vulnerable or susceptible to a loss of citizenship, social exclusion, isolation, and for some of the reasons that I will outline in this talk. But before I move on, I just want to talk a little bit about this picture we have in front of us. It's a painting by William Uttermullen, and it's called The Bed. He painted it in 1991 as part of a series of paintings called Conversation Pieces. I think it's a beautiful piece of art, and I heard his wife talk about his artwork in a YouTube video, and she commented on this piece of art because William Uttermullen was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease in 1995, I think it was. So just a few years after he produced this painting. And his wife felt that he perhaps already had some inclination that something was very wrong for him, and cognitively something was going awry. And she highlighted the fact that he painted a reflection of himself. You can see that there on the left, and also the black and darkness behind the door. And Bill Uttermullen went on to take part in a research project, which is a fascinating piece of research, and there's a reference to that and to all the articles I'll be mentioning at the end of this talk. So you might want to look at that in a bit more detail. But today I want to talk more about citizenship, and also this idea of taking part in society and how it's something within us all. Certainly in the UK, senior citizens during this pandemic have really taken it upon themselves to do what they can to make a difference and to raise funds. Some of you who followed BBC News may recognise this particular gentleman. It is, of course, Captain Tom Moore. And Captain Moore, he walked around his garden 100 times. He did 100 laps of his garden during the first lockdown, and raised more than £30 million for the NHS. And he also created a single, I think, which raised lots of money. And thereafter, many other senior citizens thought, right, I'm going to do something very similar. And here's another person. This is Joan Rich, and she walked 102 laps of her local park just before her 102nd birthday. What a remarkable physical and psychological achievement, really, to be able to do that. And what I really liked about Joan, when I heard her speak about her achievement on the news, was that she said, well, I walked 102 laps. Tom Moore only walked 100. So I think that kind of shows how important it is that we all kind of want to compete. We want to be in the human race. We want to do whatever we can to kind of make a difference. Of course, for many older people and for many people with dementia in particular, I think that drive to participate in life can be evaporated or extinguished completely sometimes for people. And not necessarily because of older age or the debilitating nature of dementia, but perhaps because someone's living in poverty or they lack the opportunities and resources to actually take part in society, or certain societal norms and attitudes are kind of prevailing and preventing someone from actually taking part. For example, why is it still okay to exclude someone with dementia from a decision about their care, which happens a lot still? And I've got a couple of examples of that coming up. So no one wants to get left behind. And that's an idea, of course, that comes from the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals or Global Goals Initiative. And it's an idea that people don't want to be left behind, lacking choices and the capabilities that enable others to participate in or benefit from human development. So clearly many older citizens, senior citizens like Captain Tom Moore, like former nurse Joan Rich, they have the resources and the know-how and the support to carry on and to participate in life, which is great, even during a pandemic crisis. Or perhaps because of a pandemic crisis, it's created that opportunity for people like that to show how capable they actually are, given the opportunity. But of course, I think for the vast majority of older people, and again, I think for many, many people with dementia, that they're at great risk of being left behind, particularly during this pandemic crisis. And I'm thinking here of older people in care homes, people who live on their own home, in their own home by themselves, who may be housebound, people who perhaps lack access to the internet or technologies, or who may be waiting for surgery or medical treatment and they're unable to receive that at the moment. So I think it's very important of this idea of not being left behind. And the UN pledge is used very much as a commitment to end extreme poverty in all its forms and to act explicitly to ensure that those who have been left behind can catch up to those who have experienced greater progress. And it's very often used in relation to people living in low and middle income countries. And it's a very important idea, I think, for people across the world who perhaps have no services to even access. But I want to deploy it here today to highlight the impoverished position that many citizens with dementia may well find themselves in. And I use the word citizens quite deliberately because very often people with dementia are referred to as patients. Even if you're not talking about care or services or someone being in hospital, the word patients is usually used when talking about people with dementia. So I'm talking about citizens and citizenship. So moving on to thinking about this idea of citizenship and social citizenship, as many of you are perhaps aware, the original idea originated in during the Roman state, the development of the Roman state, and during Aristotle times, And at that time, the term was used very much to distinguish between good and bad citizens. And essentially, a good citizen was someone who was civic-minded, politically active, and full of civic spirit, and also educated. So many, many people were excluded as being seen as a citizen at this time, including women, and certainly anyone with any kind of disability would be excluded. More recent understandings of citizenship were developed during the French Revolution in the mid-18th century. And Brian Turner writes a lot about this. And this idea of citizenship was much more linked to equality and people's inalienable rights. So we all have a right to liberty, to freedom, etc. And even more recently, you may well be aware of the development of citizenship around by Thomas Marshall and during post-war Britain, who brought to the fore the idea of civil, social and political rights. So that's the kind of history, a very potted history of citizenship. And moving on to very current understandings, and I would say there's been a huge kind of resurgent interest in citizenship as a concept over the past 10, 20 years within citizenship studies scholarship. And I just want to highlight for you some of the main differences, you like, or the way in which the agenda now is kind of shaping within citizenship studies. And perhaps I think one of the key differences, or one of the key items on the agenda, if you like, is that it's about people's relationships with the structures of rule and belonging, which may be related to the nation state and to government, but not necessarily. It's about good citizenship in relation to welfare services, for example, or in relationship to other aspects of rule and belonging. So it's a much broader idea that's being kind of used at the moment in the field. And another important idea, I think, particularly for us, is this idea of ordinariness and citizenship process, which Catherine Niveau, who's a French sociologist, I think, she's written a wonderful paper on the importance of thinking about ordinary spaces and places where we can kind of enact our citizenship, like our back garden at the moment, for example. So politics is not reserved for certain times and places, she says, like Westminster in England or Holyrood in Scotland, but should be part and parcel of daily, ordinary situations, encounters and spaces. And of course, during pre-COVID times, that may well have been a coffee shop sitting around and talking and chatting with people, and perhaps coming up with a new idea to challenge the status quo, or, you know, discussing an important initiative. So that's how we might see kind of ordinary politics taking place. But of course, now during the pandemic, I think politics in ordinary places is perhaps even more visible and obvious, and it is perhaps changing the nature of our interactions within ordinary places and spaces, like outside a cafe or a supermarket or wherever we may encounter other people. So I think that's a really important idea for us to hold on to and to maybe use when we think about citizenship. So I just wanted to let you know about a new citizenship project that I'm co-leading with Professor Inga Maria Lid at VID Specialised University. And we're using some of these ideas of of everydayness, of ordinariness, to explore and examine everyday citizenship for and with persons with disabilities in vulnerable situations. And we're including people with intellectual disabilities, as well as people with dementia, of course. So if you're interested in finding out more about that project, we are on Facebook, if you're still on there, and Twitter. So that's one of the areas of work that we're interested in at the moment. Just want to think for a moment about what social citizenship means, particularly in relation to people with dementia. And about 10 years ago now, me and Deb O'Connor, we wrote a text about bringing this lens to the field of dementia care, to the field of dementia studies, and offered this as a possible definition of social citizenship. As a relationship, a practice or status in which a person with dementia is entitled to experience freedom from discrimination. And I've subsequently added despair to that definition for reasons I will explain in a moment. And also to have opportunities to grow and participate in life to the fullest extent possible. So that's a theoretical definition of social citizenship, which has led to quite a lot of new work in dementia studies, which is building on citizenship as an idea and using it to certainly explore people's relationships with these, ruling relations, if you like, to take Dorothy Smith's idea, and this idea of belonging, particularly within a care context. And this is just one example from colleagues in Norway, Gurul Usen and Teresa Lotherington, who have explored how care collectives work within families and care institutions to act and produce citizenship. So that's one example of how work is developing, certainly within dementia studies, in relation to citizenship. I think it's important to just emphasise and state that dementia is a disability. It is a long-term neurological condition which affects people's abilities and capacities in daily life. So people are protected under the Convention of the Rights of Persons with a Disability, of which there are many articles. And I'm just highlighting Article 19 here, which is about a person with a disability having the right to choose their place of residence and have access to a range of in-home services, including personal assistance necessary to support independent living in the community. So I just want you to kind of hold on to that right, which is certainly in the CRPD, and think to what extent that is happening. And I would suggest that it's not being enacted or put into place at all, really. And we perhaps only need to look back to some of the work in disability studies about how many people with disabilities are often segregated and institutionalised. And I'm just highlighting here, I think, what's a classic paper by Rob Kitchin, a social geographer, who wrote in 1998 about how people with disabilities are often kind of excluded and have this feeling of sort of knowing their place, i.e. being segregated from other people. And those kind of spatial dynamics can work to exclude people with disabilities. Now, that was published 1998, so many years ago now. And I think in dementia studies, we're still needing to engage with this work and engage with these ideas. And I think in many ways, we're perhaps about 15 to 20 years behind disability studies. And certainly, I think in relation to people with dementia being institutionalised or you know, placed in a care home. Christine Kelly, who I think may be here in the audience, she's mentioned how and wrote about how wholesale rejections of institutionalisation is very rare in ageing studies. But actually in disability studies, it's an ongoing debate and it's a very important part of the disability movement. So I just wanted to highlight how we perhaps need to draw not only on citizenship studies, but also disability studies. And I think those intersections between all those three fields of scholarship can be quite useful for us. So moving on, let's think about, focus very much on the kind of theoretical ideas behind citizenship. Let's just look at what citizenship might mean at an empirical or practical level. And here I really like the work of Håkon Trøtteberg, who's based at the Institute of Social Research in Oslo. And he talks about the need to map how users can control and influence their lives when using public services. And he suggests that choice is a key indicator, and choice over provider, and also to what degree they can exit an institution. So, you know, can someone leave a care home? So I've got a couple of examples of people with dementia trying to leave a care home, and both examples they've had to use the legal system because of the challenges in doing so. Now, the first example is 7 years ago, so 7 years before COVID. And this is the case of Manuela Sykes. In February 2014, aged 89, she won the right to return to her flat. And she was living at the time in a care home, but it said in the legal note she was miserable. So she actually won the right to return to her flat for a trial period. She was diagnosed with a dementia 8 years previously, and she was named in media reports in line with her wishes. She'd always been a very strong activist and campaigner for the Labour Party and for women's rights. After a diagnosis of dementia, she campaigned on behalf of people with dementia. And in fact, I remember contacting her when I did my research on dementia activism to ask her if she wanted to take part in the study, but I think she was too busy campaigning at the time. But her case, I think, is an interesting one because looking at the legal report and the court proceedings, we can see how easily someone and how routinely someone with dementia is pathologized and medicalized. The expert psychologist said in court she had an apparent obsession with returning home. And I think very easily people's wishes and desires and rights are not seen as such. They are medicalized and pathologized instead. And in this case, the judge ruled that the local authority should be her servant, not her master. So a very clear example, I think, of how social citizenship can work in practice. But it's just one case. Imagine if everyone in a care home who was miserable, and I'm not suggesting everybody is, but I imagine many people are, imagine if they had the legal advocacy that Manuela Sykes had to actually return and leave. I think we'd need to kind of reshape our services. And the second example is from the COVID era. So this is a very recent example during the summer. And this is the case of Lynn Rogers. She lives in a nursing home in Victoria, Australia. And she was diagnosed with dementia, and she also has some other health conditions. And in July, she wrote up a short diary for the Global Perspective newsletter published by ADI in July of this year. And she wrote a week in the life in a nursing home. And what I found fascinating about her diary was how during the first lockdown, she was denied the right to go out for a walk around the local botanical gardens, which is what she'd always done previously, and which many of us, even during lockdown conditions, we've still been able to go outside and exercise. Now, Lynn was told she wasn't allowed to go out. So she wrote a formal letter initially to the care home manager, who took it to the regional manager, and eventually ended up with the Minister of Health. So in her diary, she says during the second lockdown, she actually was able to go out for a walk around the botanical gardens. So she won her right there to leave the nursing home. So I think both of these cases highlight how difficult it can be for someone with dementia to leave a nursing home. And that highlights, I think, how easily it can be for someone's potential contribution and efforts to stay connected to society can be extinguished, which is what I was talking about earlier. So just some concluding remarks. A citizenship lens, I think, can shine a light on the status and opportunities or lack of afforded to persons with dementia. And I think moving to a care home is still the norm for people with dementia. Someone with dementia is five times more likely than any other older person to actually be placed in a care home. And once there, it can be very difficult for people to leave without recourse to legal procedures. And then finally, when citizenship intersects with disability and ageing studies, I think it can open our eyes up to the multiple injustices facing many people with dementia. And perhaps just to leave you with a quote from Kate Swoffer, who you may well know is a leading dementia campaigner. She lives with dementia herself. She's Australian. And she says, we must not be forgotten and must not be left behind. And hopefully this may be the positive side to this pandemic. So thank you very much for your attention today. If you're interested in any of the work that I've published and written, then you can just hover your smartphone over that code and my ORCID will pop up for you. And there are just a few references that you might be interested in following up. So thanks very much for listening. Back to you, Ed.
Lovely. Thanks, Ruth.